Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. For those of you that were looking forward to our talk about the Supreme Court and the shadow docket, that show is being rescheduled, unfortunately, due to the unexpected illness of a guest. To my friend Jim Brosnahan, we're pulling for you. Hope to see you better and back with us soon. Tonight, we bring you a very different show that we had in mind. Joining me tonight in the first segment and throughout the broadcast is a guest that's well known to Your Legal Rights listeners, election specialist and activist Brent Turner. And in a later segment, our special guest, attorney, author, and advocate Christine Pelosi. The Assistant Registrar of Voters in Shasta County, Brent Turner, will join us to talk about life as an elections official, as the country goes through election turmoil. Mr. Turner was recruited by Shasta County to step in and provide calm, a very much needed calm, in a very heated situation. And without further ado, let me welcome Brent Turner.
Hello, Jeff.
Brent, welcome. You're on the air. Welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. Thanks for hosting.
You know, we talked a lot about some of the things that have been going on, and since then, even more has gone on. Talk a little bit about how you got to Shasta County.
Well, the one-liner is, you know, just good luck, Jeff. It was an interesting moment where I had to make a decision. My first thought was no, but then upon further consideration and their persistent request, I ended up capitulating, and now I'm in Shasta. And looking forward to the November 4th election. Basically, as you mentioned, I was brought in because this territory has been very tumultuous. And they thought I would be a good addition to the registrar, Clint Curtis, who is renowned for bold behavior in the election space. And he became known nationally as he was asked by a sitting congressman to create vote flipping software. And he testified under oath in front of Congress about that event. So there are two of us. He's a registered Republican. Of course, I'm known in the Bay Area as a Democrat. We're there to fight the good fight, to try to provide best security methodology to Shasta County.
And for many months beforehand, long before you envisioned yourself working as part of it, you were here talking about the revolution in Shasta County.
Well, certainly it's an interesting territory in that interesting county, and that they threw Dominion out because they were skeptical regarding the election system software, the technology, as well as the company. And so that happened. And then they were attempting to go to a hand count. And Governor Newsom stepped in and said, no hand counting. So at that point, of course, I was hoping that they would move toward our preferred open source election systems, but instead they went ahead with HART, another closed source intellectual property protected software system, and that's where they are today. And so to make a security workaround, knowing that the software is at issue with these corporate owned systems, We're doing some ballot management that is extreme and cutting edge, and that seems to help the situation, help public confidence in that this is as transparent as a system as can be, considering that we can't really look at the software in the tabulation system.
And I do want to invite callers before we go further. I want to ask you the big question. We heard from Clint Curtis. We haven't yet heard from you. And I did want to ask your position on redistricting, on gerrymandering, on Proposition 50. But before I do want to give our guests a chance to join in. If you have a question, if you have a question about Proposition 50, if you have a question about redistricting, if you have a question about Shasta County, if you have a question about some of the goings-on now, which I understand are rather extreme, give us a call. Our number here is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. We're talking about elections. We're talking about proposition. But first, we are talking to Dave in Redwood City. Dave, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want to be on the air. I wanted to talk to an attorney in the back room.
Oh, we are not doing that presently. I have not in some months or some years since the pandemic. I hope that we do resume that in the future, but we do not have our call a lawyer segment going.
Pardon. Is there a subject tonight would need to hear, or is it free?
Tonight we are talking about elections from a few different perspectives. In the first segment, I have Brent Turner, the assistant election official from Shasta County. We're going to be talking about Proposition 50, amongst other things. There's also some...
I apologize for not understanding the situation. I support Proposition 50.
Want to tell us why? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I want you to know you're welcome, and we're going to be talking about that, and you can get in the first word.
Only because, from my understanding, is it will counteract or neutralize the events that in Texas that redistricting events that will help balance those against what could happen in California, what's going on in Texas.
That's a very valid point. And personally, I see both sides of it. I'm going to ask our guests over the course of the show, but I wanted to give you the chance to weigh in on that. But you're welcome to call back anytime. You're welcome to come in and chat on the show. And I appreciate you joining us tonight.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Brent, I want your thoughts on that. Now, we did talk to Clint Curtis about this back on August the 13th. And he was not a big fan of Proposition 50, although it had not been developed. The arguments on both sides had not been fully developed by that point. Are you in accord with him? You think it's a bad idea, or do you think that it's something that we have to gulp hard and do? Or maybe you're in favor of it as a means of looking forward. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, as an election official, it's inappropriate for me to comment. But I think it's all fairly obvious, and I would say, certainly I am not expressing an alignment with Mr. Curtis. We are not the same person. We have different points of view on a lot of things, but it would not be appropriate for me to disclose my position, as I'm in now this Shasta County official position.
Fair enough. One thing that we have talked about are some of the goings-on in Shasta County. Have things really calmed down?
Yes, they have. The newspapers there bemused that I had coined it as a social experiment, and I stand by my statement. We've taken the most vehement, purportedly rabid folks and smushed them together in a professional, positive atmosphere, and it's worked well. The people are enjoying the new methods that we've deployed. They enjoy working together. They realize that the monster on the other side is actually human to some degree. And it's created, I think, a plan for other counties that are suffering what Shasta County was suffering. It's pioneering in a lot of ways, but the idea is to take people that are upset and task them with the actual administration of the election. And they get involved and they gain perspective and foundational education. It's been quite a positive situation there.
So you're actually taking the people that are the strongest critics or opponents and bringing them into the fold and saying, look, hands on, let's let you play with it a bit and see how you feel about us afterwards.
Exactly. And they recognize then the folks that do the day-to-day administrating of these elections are not the great evil, and that we are relegated to the systems we have. And yes, as in Shasta County, the system can be rearranged like Clint Curtis did to their surrounding procedures. And it could be an open source software voting system where the public could gain oversight of the tabulation piece. But all systems can be improved. And this is just one that deserves particular in-the-moment attention for these upgrades, because obviously we have a national security crisis surrounding elections, and certainly we have a public confidence crisis. So we want to restore that public confidence and just bolster the security surrounding the systems.
And let me turn it over to Carolyn Fairfax. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I have a comment and a question. So my first comment is, although I'm pretty much a lefty and I agree, I don't like Proposition 50, but I think we have to do it. If Margaret Hoover from Firing Line, she did a program that was very good and very extensive, trying to refute these theories that somehow Dominion or some other software were changing the election results. And it's very concerning to me. My question is, what can we do to counteract that? Because it seems ridiculous when we were the democracy that everybody was trying to follow and emulate, and now we have this wannabe dictator, and we have false information. I really don't know how to counter it, because I do have relatives and neighbors who repeat these conspiracy theories to me, and I'm not really sure, like, how do you counteract this? How do you tell people
you do it with the science that's available. There's very smart people all around the world that have dedicated many, many hours and years of life to this particular issue. And of course, it comes out of the civil rights movement and the work of Medgar Evers and others that died for this particular issue. Now that it's carried into the world of technology, it deserves complete attention. And that attention has been provided, in my opinion, and by the opinion, I think, of the preponderance of experts, if not the great majority, that in order to take control of the environment, it cannot be an intellectual property protected environment where the software is owned by corporations. It has to be a publicly available open source software, specifically general public license, so that along with a good paper ballot, you know, you now have appropriate software that is in keeping with what the Air Force and NASA and other mission critical operations utilize. So that's really something to study and know about, because if we can become in California like other states, specifically New Hampshire and Mississippi, that are ahead of us regarding this technology, because the systems that actually were developed here in California are now deployed there and functional with good reviews, they should be here, but we have an issue with political will, because candidly, the people that sell software don't enjoy open source software, although for this particular piece of democracy, it is necessary, if we're really going to have the adult conversation, to admit that the systems currently that are running on corporate-owned software, your Dominions, your ES&S, Hart InterCivics, and so on, those need to be sidelined and sort of phased out, and these systems that are more defensible need to come into existence more ubiquitously, because and it's a race to get them, in my opinion, into swing states, fully deployed nationally, so that we now have good oversight of the systems. We don't want to cause people to think it's not a good idea to vote and that all elections are rigged because the systems aren't up to standard necessarily. But we do want to have that adult conversation and make sure we hurry along with deploying.
Okay, but let me interrupt you for a minute, Brent. You're making valid points. I took Carol's comment much more broadly than just about election software, but rather I took it as information source, how at one time we had radio and television meant networks, and they all strive for the middle and investigated every point. And all of America took it for granted that when you heard something on Walter Cronkite, you could take it to the bank. And now the sources of media are very stratified. There's cable channels of every sort. There's social media. The president himself blasts things on social media that in the world I live may not have a great basis in fact. But sometimes he's right, and sometimes the media that we've come to believe may not be. And yet most of America tunes into sources that they develop comfort from because they represent a particular point of view that they happen to like. And maybe they like to listen to Newsmax and not listen in here. Or maybe they don't like CNN and they'll go to Truth Social. Before we go further into that conversation, I would like to take the call from Bruno. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for taking the call. So I just have one comment and then a question real quick. Gerrymandering or redistricting, however you want to phrase it, has been going on for 200 years. But there's a few states that really take pride in it. Like California has 38% Republicans, yet they hold 20% of the seats. New York has 43% Republican, and they hold 26% of the seats. There's a number of those. There's a number of blue states that have similar numbers, and Republicans hold zero seats. They don't have a lot of wiggle room. I like what we had in California prior to this current legislature and governor getting involved in it. I thought they had the solution with an independent panel taking care of it. But, of course, all things get political, and now here we go. My question is not related to that, although you can run with it. My question is, voter ID seems to be a hot button for some reason, and they keep trying to push that away under the guise of telling us that it's racist and racially motivated, which is an insult to people of color trying to suggest that they can't get an ID. I mean, come on, huh? This is 2025. Let's go. Let's be honest about that conversation. I appreciate you taking the call, and I will keep listening, but I will mute myself.
Well, before you hang up,
yes, sir.
Let me throw a question back to both of you. You mentioned about gerrymandering and doing it from the perspective of limiting the number of seats or maximizing the number of seats, however you wish to look at it, of the minority party, at least the minority party here. But if we did it differently, aren't we diluting at some level local voting? Shouldn't we do what we can to maximize the effect of the people in these various districts rather than, for better or for worse, trying to jimmy the number of seats to benefit one side or the other?
Agree with the last part. It shouldn't benefit one side or the other. It should be true to the geography and the demographics as stated by the Census Bureau and as judged by an independent commission, which is what we had until a few months ago.
But it seems to me that for a lot of the state, the district lines can be moved to in various configurations. And if you have a fairly cohesive community, whether it's along ethnic lines or racial lines or political lines, that we should try to hold that community together so that they can speak with a common voice, since that's one group that might not be heard from.
I think it's great, Jeff, in your Pollyanna state, but yeah, it's not that environment, unfortunately. But I can't comment on this particular issue. Going back, one caller who we sort of abruptly disconnected when you said that perhaps I'd misinterpreted her question. It sounded to me like she wanted an exact answer. When we talk about gerrymandering, that's great. And when we talk about different issues, that's great too. But again, I have to be persistent that until you address the issue of the election systems being up to an appropriate standard, you're giving anyone that wants to contest the elections a red carpet to do so because they actually have a point. And you want to take that point away from anybody that would like to disrupt the United States by alleging that our elections are not up to standard. So that was the reason for my response to that previous caller. Regarding this one, I would say it's an interesting environment. I can't comment, but I'm glad to comment about the environment on any other subject that other than Proposition 50.
And the other thing we were going to talk about, maybe we'll save until we come back for the second half hour, but one comment that Carol made, and Carol, we got disconnected. Feel free to call us back.
By the way, Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff, I believe my friend Christine Pelosi may be joining us here in a bit, and she can speak her mind regarding issues and isn't constrained like I am on that one in particular.
Absolutely. You are an elected official in a capacity of actually counting votes and keeping that system fair. Per se, that would keep you from answering certain questions. And I will not be the one to apply that filter. I trust you to do so. So if I ask you something that puts you in that spot, I expect that you'll do exactly that.
That's the, That's the only thing. And just to make a slight correction, I'm an election official, but I was appointed. So I'm not an actual elected official, just to be clear.
Right. You were appointed by the person elected.
No. Actually, I was appointed by the person appointed, and that all came through the Board of Supervisors as well. There was the people in front of the current registrar, Clint Curtis, they retired. So they were in a situation where they needed to fill spots.
And, so technically, Clint Curtis is not running for re-election. He's running for election.
That's correct. In June, correct.
There was a time when there were posters, targets, being passed around in Shasta County or posted publicly. Has that ceased?
Yeah, you know, there's been some death threats going on. There's been some vandalism. There's been posters with a gun on them and so on. You know, we've got a week to go till the election, and it's an intense territory up there. The folks there are intense about elections, and they also are very close to that mountain there, Mount Shasta, which may have some sort of a gravitational pull. So I'm half kidding. I don't know, but it is an intense territory, and but I enjoy it, and I enjoy seeing the transformation from the time that I arrived till now, because it's night and day, and I you know, encourage people to take a look. You can see it online. What's the different procedural changes that we've accomplished.
And once again, we would encourage callers, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. We're talking about elections. We're talking about election vote counting. We're talking about Proposition 50, although our current guest can't necessarily mention that. We have tremendous guests tonight. We have Brent Turner with us, who should be known to all of you. And we do anticipate being joined momentarily by Christine Pelosi. Our phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Tonight's topics are fairly broad. You can join us about anything on tonight's topics. You want to talk about the upcoming election, which will be the subject of next week's show. What happened? How did it get to be that place? But you can talk about the election coming up now. You don't have to join us in the exact spot we are in our conversation, which we will return to in a matter of moments. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, I'm Pandu. I'm a doctor. You might have guessed that because I'm Indian.
Join us for more True Stories Told Live. Next time, stories of life, death, and life after death. That's on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
The Moth Radio Hour tonight at 7 o'clock on 91.7 FM, KALW San Francisco. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Law Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. You can call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. You're listening to Your Legal Rights with Jeff Hayden on Local Public Radio, 91.7 FM, KALW.
So shortly before we left, we were talking about one of the great challenges of our time. People don't seem to agree on much of anything anymore. We're faced with media that is so broadly stratified that people develop comfort into listening to someone who echoes their pre-existing views. We have people that don't trust television news or won't pick up a newspaper or won't do anything but go on social media. And we have all this untested information. That's a challenge we've never faced before. Brent, what are your thoughts? How do we counter this misinformation?
Well, I think it's up to the tech bros to some extent. And of course, they've been disappointing, other than Lurie stopping Trump from invading San Francisco. The tech bros have been disappointing, I think, in that they continue to rally around Trump. But I think they control certain choke points, and they could do their patriotic duty by making sure that they're not the conduit for outside of country interference agents peddling disinformation. And of course, we know with these echo chambers that occur within social media, it's horrible for the kids and it's horrible for young adults. And I think it's horrible for pretty much everybody. So we've seen now with the tech bros and the AI that we're in some very dangerous waters regarding technology, not only the issue with open source software and elections, but open source software regarding AI, which Zuckerberg and Gates and Sam all agreed on one thing. You got to have open source with this AI. Now, of course, we're in these waters, and I don't know if there's a way out necessarily. That's beyond my pay grade. I think it's up to people to educate our young that you don't get a degree from Facebook, and that these people that fill those spaces with information are not credible necessarily or commonly. So that's my thought on it. It's a national security issue where I think the same people that might want to interfere with our elections also put up campaigns within social media, and that's proven by our intelligence communities regarding bots and Russian and other influence.
This is a great time for us, Brent, to continue this conversation. I'd like to bring in our special guest tonight. We are joined tonight by attorney, author, and advocate Christine Pelosi. Ms. Pelosi has been a voice for women's rights, grassroots politics, electing Democrats, and perhaps most importantly, well, certainly most importantly, defending our democracy. And I'd like to welcome you to Your Legal Rights. The question that Brent was just answering is, we've clearly moved from a time where we all agreed that we could trust what Walter Cronkite told us to a time when what we hear is so stratified. And there's no singular truth that people are willing to accept. How do you deal with some of what at least we would perceive as misinformation?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. I just came in from a different Zoom, out of a different Zoom room into this one with the National Federation of Democratic Women, where I was joining my Democratic National Committee colleague, who heads up the Voter Participation Center, Raina Walters-Morgan, and we were talking about election integrity, and we were visiting with the women from New Jersey who are trying to elect Mikey Sherrill, their first woman governor of New Jersey. And whether it's New Jersey, whether it's California, whether it's Virginia, whether it's Pennsylvania with their Supreme Court or municipal elections around the country, what we're facing are two things. One, a very determined electorate, who is especially in California, where the ballot return numbers are higher now than they were a year ago for the presidential, is very determined to make our mark, as it were, and voice our position on Prop 50, the Election Rigging Response Act, in response to Donald Trump calling Texas and saying, I need five new House seats, the way he called Georgia and said he needed 11,000 votes and change in 2020. So you have that. You also have an enormous amount of misinformation out there. I was actually just looking at something from Secretary of State Shirley Weber about people getting misinformation from what purports to be a ballot tracker called Ballot Now. Days ago, the Republicans, even though they claim they've given up on raising money, they actually are still raising money, only they're not even putting their brand name on it. They have something called ProtectYourVote2025.org, which is a Republican PAC, but it's posing as a nonprofit and mailers to voters in the Central Valley. So make no mistake, gentlemen, we are here talking about this tonight because we're not just talking about defending our democracy by giving America a fair fight for a competitive Congress in 2026. We're also talking about protecting our own democracy and our own right to vote unencumbered by misinformation and lies in 2025. And I just think that people have to speak out. If you get a strange mailer or email or text that doesn't seem right, you need to say something, put it on social media so the rest of us can see it. And obviously, as we go into this final weekend of Get Out the Vote, your legal rights, as your show says, are that you have the right to cast your ballot unencumbered by a manipulation. And the Democratic Party has a great website, iwillvote.com, where people can go to get a lot of information and make sure we are doing everything we can to get the truth out there, because people do want to vote. And if all those millions of people who marched in No Kings, including the many hundreds of thousands in California, including the thousands who we were with on the beach spelling out No King, Yes on Prop 50, could also get out the vote for Prop 50, we will win overwhelmingly on Tuesday, despite their shenanigans.
Well, social media.
I like that word shenanigans, by the way, Christine. And I just have to say hello to you. And, you know, I always applaud you. And thanks for your great work within the party and also putting open source software in the party platform. So thank you for all you do.
Well, thank you, Brent. We remember we worked on it when we first put open source in the California Democratic Party platform. Now, this was, oh my gosh, now I'm dating us, because it was 2006, okay? So 19 years ago. And what was interesting about this, well, I think it was interesting, y'all be the judge, but what I thought was interesting about it was the grief that I got from people who said, you can't do this because these tech companies do so much for the Democratic Party. We should let them develop their software and it should be proprietary. And I said, well, wait a second. If they're doing something for the Democratic Party, that's great. But what they should be doing is something for democracy. As you were just saying before, at least with AI, they realize it has to be open source. Well, if intelligence is open source, why wouldn't ballot information be open source? Why wouldn't we all be able to have a voter-verified paper trail, a voter-verified code trail, right, to let us know how our ballots are being counted and to check the work. So, we've been at this a long time. And I think that, you know, like everything else, there are corporate executives who believe in open source and those who don't. We can't paint everybody with the same brush, because some people do get it, that the more accountability you have, the more trust you have, and the more success that you can have. And I think that with this younger generation of voters who've been the most advertised to and the most, AI'd to, right? You know, the most manipulated by media, they have a really good BS radar. And they know that, you know, they know accountability when they see it. And I really think that open source is going to have to be the future of voting software, just as it is the future of AI. Because if not, you will never, ever fully trust outside manipulation, either from outside the country or outside a particular voting area.
Does that apply to arenas other than voting? How do we get a verification, a trail, on some of the things that are hitting social media now every day when we have people?
Again,
that...
all you can do is do the immediate fact check. And people are busy. People are busy. And so because they're busy, if they don't necessarily check to see if it's AI or not, like they look at it and they're like, huh, is that even true? When someone sends me something to share, I always look it up, because I'm like, well, I'm not going to be the one to share. And it could be as innocuous as the picture that was purported to be of the late beloved Robert Redford and his father. Although it turns out that was another person. Another little boy, and we thought, oh, that's so cute. It's little baby Robert Redford. No, look it up. It was actually something else, to something far more nefarious, such as the president dumping what appeared to be excrement all over protesters of No Kings. So you might say, okay, well, the No Kings one, that's an obvious mistake. But nobody has time to look to see whether or not that's little baby Robert Redford. Like, you just don't have that kind of time. Right. So if you see something that appears to be in keeping, it appears to be in sync with what you already believe, then you would tend to believe and share that without doing an independent fact check. And I think that is why it's so important for people to check it every time and say something right away, call BS on something right away. Kids know. You know, it's interesting, being the mother of a teenager who is 16. These are the COVID, kids that were home from school during COVID, and now when they want a mental health day, the schools are like, oh, no, you've got to be here. It's like, wait, you guys shut us down for a year, now all of a sudden our attendance is mandatory? Give me a break, right? The teachers use AI to develop exams, but the kids can't use AI to answer the exams. And they know when the teacher's AI'd it versus when the teacher hasn't. They know when each other have AI'd something on a group project. And they're like, no, I'm not doing that. I know that just doesn't sound like my classmate, right? And I'm not going to get myself associated with that. So I think that they are very, very skeptical of what's thrown at them. And I think having a younger set of fact checkers is really good, because they can move more quickly in real time. And they're also very good at calling something out. But I think the way to do it isn't just to say you lie, because frankly, people, especially in politics, assume all politicians lie. They assume all corporations lie a little bit to advertise. But instead to say, hey, we're not that stupid. Are we as stupid as you think we are? No, we're not. We're wise to this. Come back and give us something real. Come back and give us something better. So rather than making it about the person who told the lie, make it about how they underestimated you as a consumer of information. Because no one consumes more information than a teenager or a young adult. And no one is more able to turn that around and say, hey, look, I'm an expert in the subject matter of images being thrown at me. So I don't, you know, don't give me something fake that I could dummy up myself. Give me something real. And I think that fight for authenticity is really important. It's a lot harder. It's a lot harder with older people who are just not that dexterous with social media. I wish they were, but they're, but they're not. So I think we have to, this is where in politics, in business, in radio and entertainment, we've got to trust our young people to be our barometers out there and uplift them when they're trying to cut against the grain and frankly, call us older folks out on some of the, some of our assumptions that are not true.
You mentioned that before you joined us, you were on another Zoom call with other states and chatting about some of the gerrymandering that's taking place. Where do you see all this going?
Well, this was a tough one for me, to be honest. I don't particularly like the California Commission because I think it tilts too much towards Republicans and not towards no party preference, which is really second behind Democrats in the state. So I don't think the numbers are exactly right. And I think it's a little bit weird that as an incumbent legislator, you can't advocate for the district you want, but you can't, if you're running for a job, you can advocate to the commission for the kind of race, the kind of seat you'd like to run in. So I have some quibbles with it here or there, but it's far better than people we don't even know in Sacramento making deals behind closed doors that we can't even see. So here's a little inside story for you. So we worked very hard on Zoe Lofgren's bill for years and years and years to try to pass Zoe Lofgren's bill, which was universal redistricting. In other words, if everybody did it, and by the way, consistent with a full and accurate census count. The counted people of color, the counted immigrants, the counted everybody, documented or undocumented, which will be a big fight again in 2030, right? So you have to have a full and complete count, and then you have to redistrict from there and make sure that you have communities of interest aligned, and it's best if it's done by a commission because everybody has a quibble, everybody loses a little bit, but overall, that's just much more fair than someone who is actively running for office. So that having been said, when Texas happened and Texas, Trump called Texas and said, I want five votes. My sister lives in Texas. She lives in Houston. She's an art teacher. And actually two of the kids from her art camps had been killed in the floods. And they were still planning their funerals, little girls at camp there on the river. And little girls, they're still planning the funerals for these children when Abbott called a special session to redistrict because they were already redistricting in Texas, a new mid-decade map. And so this was like they were going to eclipse that with yet another session. And so rather than call a special session to talk about flooding, to talk about safety, they were doing it just to redistrict largely Black and brown communities out of representation in Texas. And it wasn't until Gene Wu, the minority leader of the Texas legislature, called out Abbott for that Abbott even mentioned, even brought up that relief for the flooded areas and for those grieving families and communities could be even considered in the special session. So I took that very personally, not only for the losses there, but for what it meant for the country. And so I get this call from my mom, Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, and she says, we're thinking about doing this in California. And they want me to go to Sacramento and meet with people. And I was like, that's a loser. I hate that. Didn't we just pass the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Act twice that has universal redistricting? Why are you going to undermine that by having this? She said, well, because of what they did in Texas, it's our only way. I said, well, I'll tell you what, if they put the maps on the ballot and they require going back after 2030, they make sure that it's temporary and not suspending the entire commission in our Constitution, then I would be for it. But they've got to draw the maps and put them on the ballot first. Well, enough people like me said that they ended up in like 1 week drawing the maps. They are actually on your ballot. So if you haven't voted yet, you can actually go look at your ballot book. You can actually look at the maps on your ballot, what they look like now and what they will look like after Prop 50 is passed. And the initiative specifically says that it is written in to the bill that it is required to go back to the commission to draw the lines after the 2030 census. So I think that there are a lot of what I'd call good government Democrats like me that they had to appease before we would do this because I don't like doing this. But I don't like losing a fair fight more. I don't like losing my health care more. I don't like people losing Medicaid more than I dislike mid-decade redistricting. So, you know, California didn't start this fight, but we're going to have to end it. And when people say meet fire with fire, I would say it's the difference between a wildfire and a controlled burn. Trump is the wildfire and California is the controlled burn.
What do you hear from some of the other states? We've heard a bit about red states. Missouri, for example, wants to get rid of the one Democratic seat and remap it.
Excuse me, Reverend Cleaver, the only black congressman in the state of Missouri, just so we're clear about their intentions. Now, I've been in touch with them. Russ Carnahan, who's the state chair of the Missouri Democratic Party, former member of Congress, and his wife, Deborah, who's a retired judge. They're friends. I saw them recently at the DNC meeting. And then I just saw her again 2 weeks ago at the another DNC women's event. And she told me they have a deadline of December to collect petitions for a ballot measure that would overturn the attempts to get rid of Mr. Cleaver's seat. So Missouri does have an initiative process, and they are busy collecting their signatures, and they believe they will have enough signatures to put a rejection of the redistricting on the ballot. In Indiana, they had resisted for a long time. Congressman Andre Carson, whose district they're trying to cover up, again, an African-American member of Congress. They're trying to carve up his district and redistrict it away. He has been leading the charge there in the fights against them. In Virginia, now we're talking Democrats, L. Louise Lucas, the Senate president, and in Virginia, is calling in a special session to draw new lines that would more accurately reflect the black community in and increase black districts, which presumably then would be competitive or democratic in Virginia. And if we win that governor's race on Tuesday with Abigail Spanberger, he'd have a Democrat who could sign it. In Maryland and Governor Wes Moore is very interested. In Illinois, Governor Pritzker is very interested, but they have run into some legislative resistance. I'm hoping that a big vote in California on Tuesday will lend some courage and comfort and resources to those other states that this is possible, particularly when they look at the outcome from our swing communities, such as the Central Valley, where we're going to have to have a strong showing for Prop 50 in order to turn those into competitive districts that Democrats can win in 2026. So that's just a handful of the states, but we all talk to each other. We all encourage each other. And the Texas Democrats are very clear that our vote for Prop 50 is not only a vote for California, but it's also a vote for Texas, particularly Texas Latino and African-American and indigenous communities that are being redistricted away, redistricted away by Greg Abbott.
How do we get from where we are today to where we need to be, to where states won't gerrymander the heck out of their maps, both blue and red, and eliminate the purposes?
Well, we do two things. We win. We do what Speaker Nancy Pelosi did, which was pass the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Act that has universal redistricting by commission, and we bust the filibuster in the Senate as necessary to make sure that we pass it in the Senate. That was a deep disappointment that the Senate did not do that, did not, even though it was a nominally Democratic Senate under President Biden, did not bust the filibuster in order to pass the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Act, or we wouldn't be here. But we have to do that. And the other thing we have to do is we have to continue to support our immigrant communities, because we will lose many seats in California, for example, if we don't have a full and fair census count. So they're predicting that we'll lose a number of congressional seats because they're predicting that census return rates will be as low as they were in 2020. So we've got to do our part in California to make sure that, and around the country, to make sure that everybody is counted.
Do you see us moving towards a world certainly towards a country where people begin to move more towards where they can talk about their differences?
I think that it depends on the concept. I think that when it comes to healthcare, mental health, veterans, there's certain things that have often been bipartisan. I co-founded the DNC Veterans and Military Families Council 20 years ago, and my cousin was still active duty. He resigned his commission to go work in for the State Department. But at the time, you know, we had all of these veterans who wanted a new direction in Iraq, and we thought that we would have that leadership in the White House with John Kerry. But after he lost, one of the first things I did after that election was to pass a resolution at the DNC, introduce a resolution to have veterans outreach. Then I went to see Max Cleland, and I had only met him once because he had called me about something when I was a chief of staff on Capitol Hill, but we became really, really close. He said, it's got to be veterans and military families, Operation We Care, and you really have to engage Blue Star families. So we did, and it got passed. We had a number of candidates. I still do. I just met with a candidate 2 days ago and said, how many veterans in your district? And he didn't know. He thought he knew his district pretty well, but he didn't know how many veterans he had. I said, you got to have Veterans and Military Families Advisory Council, because that will be one of your most bipartisan elements to your campaign. And you're going to need, your district is 30% Republican. You're going to need to talk to them, and you're certainly going to need to represent them if you win. So I think that there are, I think it goes issue by issue. And the key is to keep, as Nancy Pelosi always says, the kaleidoscope in mind, where there might just be one little point in the kaleidoscope that you could form where you are talking about something. And it doesn't mean that you're going to agree on anything else, but you could at least start there. And like I said, I think cancer research, mental health, opioid, fentanyl addiction, veterans and military families, those are places where there's some common ground. And some faith communities, you have, again, some common ground. Some work on opposing the death penalty on religious grounds, for example. There are some political prisoners issues. So there are some places where we can talk. But I think the whole thing is, if you start with your tribe, you're not going to get very far. But if you are talking about something like jobs or infrastructure or veterans benefits or something particular to your community or particular to your value system, and you can really just hold space for that conversation without judging the rest of the person, I think that's how we get together. And once you see each other's humanity and you have common ground on one issue, then you can start to build it on others. And frankly, again, I think that there are people who believe and respect each other's integrity, even though they vehemently disagree with their policy prescriptions.
Christine, you just described perfectly the social experiment in Shasta County around elections, because both sides of the aisle want clean and fair elections, and they get together around one issue and they give me a pass because they know I want what they want on that one issue. And it's very interesting, but you described it very well, and thank you very much for coming on the show with us and being so candid about what's happening.
Hate to cut you off, Brent, but we are out of time. I do want to thank both of you for joining us tonight. And if you'd stick around a bit, we can talk off air. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM. Tonight, we've been joined by the assistant voting official out of Shasta County, Brent Turner, and with activist and leader Nancy Pelosi. I misspoke, Christine Pelosi, and I did not intend that slip. But I want to thank both of you for joining us. I hope you both stick around with me for a couple minutes off air. We'll be back next week with our election wrap-up on Prop 50, and I'm hoping you both can join us for that. Thank you, good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.